Every once in a while, I like to look back on pieces of culture that everyone thinks I surely had heard of, something that I definitely watched or listened to or attended, and then do my best to try to find out everything about it and just become an expert on it. In this particular case, it turned out to be the Tiger King documentary. It's not really a documentary. It's more like a filmed car crash that goes on for something on the order of 16 episodes across three different seasons. But as somebody who did so much work in documentary filmmaking, I guess I was watching it with a different eye. I thought I'd talk about how this documentary series struck me and what I came away with from it. And yes, I should probably say, spoiler alert. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Tiger King is a video avalanche of disaster, spectacle, unlikable characters, hard-to-explain situations, and as time goes on, darker and darker secrets brought to the surface to the detriment of everybody involved. What I found most fascinating about this series was how almost nobody escapes unscathed. You get a real sense after you finish it. If everybody had just kind of stuck to their own little gig, run their own little schemes, and not involved a nationwide audience, things would have gone along, if not forever, a while longer, just fine. Tiger King, ostensibly, is about Joe Exotic, a keeper and owner of a private zoo, which primarily exhibits tigers and lions, big cats, along with a smattering of other exotic animals. We walk through his weird life, the life of running a private zoo, and then, over the course of episodes, both find out about other people in this realm, this industry of privately held exotic animals, as well as eventually focusing on a feud that is ongoing between Joe Exotic and Carol Baskin, the owner of Big Cat Rescue, which itself is either an altruistic rescue operation or just more of the problem. As time goes on, more and more of these people's lives are split apart. We learn about other people in the big cat business and all of their dark secrets. And like I said, by the end of the first season, that is to say, the eight episodes that were the original Tiger King documentary, Joe is in jail, other people's futures are not certain, people have died, everything is miserable. You really do get a sense that if they hadn't agreed to allow the film crew before the current film crew in, maybe a lot more people would still have a livelihood, and a rather shady industry would have lived on a few more years. As a documentary filmmaker, I immediately think about the subjects, and then, almost immediately after, how the production came to be. How did this all happen? I've met a lot of filmmakers, and their stories can be quite variant. People who are either following an event that's going on and then focusing on one person, or a director who's just literally hired on spec by a group to tell their story, which may end with something they like or something they don't. In the case of Tiger King, you had a story that went back decades, where people had been intending to tell the story of Joe Exotic, because Joe was built from the earth to be able to provide endless spectacle. From a polyamorous marriage to his bizarre rantings on internet television, all the way through to his fights about the sanctity and functioning of his park with Carol Baskin, it was all there. Joe was a larger-than-life character, the many different people who orbited in and out. It was operatic in its breadth. The filmmakers had a bunch of things in their favor and a bunch of things against them. For example, many of the big cat people would film themselves for promotional materials. By hook and by crook, by negotiation, the filmmakers were able to get their hands on truly juicy footage of both people in their daily lives, arguments, weirdly said phrases, and more. Additionally, the different people that they would encounter who dealt in exotic animals had that weird sense of menace behind them. As we discovered in later episodes, you had people with pasts in cults and drug dealing and subterfuge and illegal activities of all sorts, bubbling underneath the surface, trying to keep it all together from day to day. I can't speak to the economics of zoos and zoo industry, but I will say that after exposing myself to 12 hours of footage across all of these episodes, I feel like the economics of private zoos really encourage cutting corners and taking a few shortcuts, trying to survive another day. To their credit, the filmmakers ask hard questions, even if it gets them in trouble, even if different people throw them off the property or refuse to talk about things further. They put in the time, easily a half decade for the most recent group, staying on top of the day-to-day changes in all of these different players as they infight, outfight, randomly fight. It becomes clear why Joe Exotic becomes the front face of this entire production. He can't resist a camera. He turns everything into a speech. And his rough-hewn manner and complete lack of filter encourages top-quality pull quotes throughout. Would I have made a documentary like this? No. I'm not really in it to expose people, to set them up for ridicule, to turn lives into a spectacle. This isn't my deal. But I respect working on a project for years and years. There was a group who got involved with Joe Exotic nearly 20 years ago, and much of that footage was lost, followed by another person talking about the entire endeavor on a podcast, which caused an article, which caused this documentary. It's clear that nobody was off the table. They speak to people who used to be part of the organizations, people who are bitter about money or personal treatment, and folks who are day-to-day staying in this entire endeavor, not quite sure where they stand, but thanks to both archival footage and intercutting with modern shots, and of course, endless B-roll of menacing and slow-motion tigers, ensuring that the audience, upon release, would be entranced with each new episode. The twists and turns, all of the watchwords to make something impossible to look away from. The first season of Tiger King is the documentary. The second season, much shorter, are what I would call bonus features, deeper dives into different people. And the third season is essentially a full expose of a cult-running magician, tiger trainer, and zoo operator that, in my opinion, leaves a person so filleted, so lacking any ability to explain anything away, that I have no idea how he still walks the earth. And there's where I part company. I would never make a documentary like this. This isn't how I function. So the idea of spending months or years trying to find every dark secret, to piece together every piece of misery, of evidence, not where I want to be. There are certainly people who do this, And often in cases of justice or bringing to light injustice, you need people to do this. It's just not what I would do. What I can respect, though, is that the first series, the first 8 episodes, are masterfully cut together. I reminded myself about how much fun it is to have so much B-roll to illustrate what people are saying. With the BBS documentary, I had to rely on old scans and photographs. For the DEFCON documentary, we had 300 hours of footage to work with. I could find anybody doing anything at any hour of the day and night. And I like that kind of a documentary. But fundamentally, and that's the case with Tiger King, education and enlightenment are not the goals. The goals are to make you slow down in life, observe the accident, the flames, the spectacle of disaster in these lives, and then let you get on your way, having achieved very little. It is absolutely a documentary, but it's not the kind of documentary I like to see. In the same weekend that I watched Tiger King, I watched a very simple documentary called Too Funny to Fail, which traces the origins and the experience of the Dana Carvey Show, a short-lived one-season comedy sketch show that had such a powerful staff that it seemed, like the title said, too funny, too talented to have possibly failed. This is a very straightforward piece of work, but even though it was just about a TV show, it was also about camaraderie, teamwork, following your vision, keeping your voice, understanding how hard it is to maintain strength in the face of insult and sadness, and for that reason, I consider it the better documentary. At the end of Too Funny to Fail, I understood what drove many of these comedians, how they thought about their work and their friendships that they developed among each other, and what the high-pressure nature of television comedy can truly be. And the best part was, it was just one episode. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Craig Talbert, Dileep Reddy, Sean Kelly, Trixie the Cat, Martin, Sembiance, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. No greater review of Tiger King need be said than by the fact that when I told people I had just watched Tiger King, their answer was, "Now? Wasn't that a while ago?" There are many classic documentaries out there, ones that I go back to time and time again, playing them and enjoying the twists and turns and the insights. At no point do I say, "Grey Gardens, why now? Indie Game the movie, why now?" And I don't think that the disposability, the non-meaningful footprint of Tiger King can be expressed better than those two words.